Oh, we're on. So this is Claire Midgley and Penny Bell, and today we're talking to Bob for the Dialects and Heritage Project. Bob, could I get you to introduce yourself?
Well, yes. I'm Robert Anthony Hunter, really, but my name, I've always been called Bob, and that's the name I trade under with Wren Cabinet Makers. Bob Hunter, Wren Cabinet Makers. But I started the woodwork business in 1948, the 6th of August to be exact. And I had an uncle who worked for Robert Thompson and had done for most of his life. And so consequently, he asked me if I would like to go and work there, and I said, of course, I would like to go and work there. And he says, right, well, there's a job there waiting for you. That was when I was 12 years old. What happened was the authorities raised the school leaving age from 14 to 15, and I have never spent such a long, awful year as that last year at school when I knew I should have been working at Robert Thompson's. I had two or three friends who all managed to leave at 14 because their birthday was before April. My birthday was in June, so consequently I had to go for another year. Anyway, eventually the time came round and I was able to start work in August 1948. I had to cycle to work, which was 5 hilly miles. And so I bought myself a new rally push bike on the hire purchase. And what a good bike that was. I could go like hell on that to Kilburn and back. I met Robert Thompson on the first day there, and he says, now then, we'll see if we can find a job for you. And the job was refurbishing some of the chairs from Ampleforth College, the ones that they use in the refectories there. My wage was 14 and eightpence for the week. We could make a little bit more if you could learn to carve a mouse, and then Robert Thompson would give you half a crown for making an ashtray, or I think it was 5 shillings for making a fruit bowl, in your own time, of course. The good thing was, first of all, you had to pluck up courage and go and say, oh, Mr. Thompson, I've carved an ashtray. Oh, right, into his back pocket and out with the cash, always. He always took an interest in what you were doing. He always strolled round every day. He didn't work in the workshop, he worked in the office most of the time doing the drawings for the church work. And I soon picked up how to carve the mice, so I was able to get a little bit more than 14 eightpence. Half a crown was a lot in those days. And we used to have an hour for dinner, and so you could go a long way towards carving an ashtray in the dinner hour. We were always encouraged to be good timekeepers. If you weren't, you soon got into trouble. Not from Robert Thompson himself, it was from the other old fellas that you were working with. They were all very strict. I never knew what bad language was till I got to Kilburn. and soon learnt that. I remember the first job that Robert Thompson gave me to do solo. You see, normally you worked with a man doing whatever parts of the job that he didn't want to do and he could push off to you. And one of the jobs, of course, was making the little quarter-inch pins that held everything together. And you had to do that simply with a chisel. First of all, you got a bit of straight-grained oak, cut off to about 3 inch long, split it with a little axe into like quarter-inch squares, and then with a chisel, you kept chiselling away till you had a lovely round dowel, plus some very bloody finger ends. And then, of course, there were other jobs. If it was part of, say, chair making, then you could graduate to doing the lattice backs, carving the leg, and that kind of thing. And you did get quite good at it, and you could do them quite quickly. The first job that he gave me to do solo was a garden gate. And funnily enough, that same gate was to go up here to Castleton, and it is still there.
Where?
The gate had the normal head and heel with a pointed top, like a house roof, and 4 or 5 upright, 1¼ square stowers, as we called them. There's another word for your penny. Mm-hmm. And I set to, very enthusiastic, down into the machine shop, cut all the bits out, did the mortise. Oh, I didn't do the mortise holes. They had an old man did all the mortise holes. And started knocking the gate together, and it was just getting on for 5 o'clock when I looked at the gate and thought, bloody hell, I've done the points the wrong way. What the hell do I do now? And it was nearly 5 o'clock, and I thought, shall I go and tell him? What shall I do? Anyway, I didn't go and tell him. I went home, and I must have laid awake all night thinking, what do I tell him? Next morning, I got to work. I walked straight into the office and said, Mr. Thompson, I've made an awful mistake with that gate. Why, what are you doing? I said, I put the points in the wrong direction. Oh, what do you mean? I said, well, the heel should be the other way around, in accordance. Oh, I see. Oh, well, never mind. He said, go up and cut them both ways so you've got a pyramid on top. I'm sure. Yeah, it'll be just as good. So, went and did that, and as I say, the gate is still there at Castle. Well, it was a couple of years ago, because I took David to show him it. I escaped with that, and probably because of that, took more care in the future. There was all sorts of things used to go on in the workshop, and one day it had snowed like hell, and we're out in the village street, and we had this big snowball fight. Next door to the workshop, to the old Robert Thompson's cottage, was another cottage, and this funny old hermit type fella lived in it. It's not there now, it's a car park, it's a cottage. And somebody threw a snowball and broke one of his windows. Well, the old fella come out, and there was hell on. And he went and got the village policeman. So the village policeman rounded a few of us up, and he whittled it down to four main culprits, myself and three others. The policeman gave us a long talking to, writing everything down in his notebook, and then he disappeared into the office. He was in the office for some time, and then old Robert Thompson come up in the workshop, and he said, "Now then, lads," he says, "there's nothing I can do about it." He says, "It's all official, it's all in his notebook, and old George Snow wants to press charges. So I'm afraid it's this magistrate's." Bloody hell. That was serious in them days, you know. And anyway, I went home that night and I thought, I think I'll go back to work because we'd lost so much time. So I went back to work, and I was just pulling into the yard, and here's the old village policeman coming out, trying to get on his bike, as drunk as a bloody lord. I went into the workshop, and there was only me there. I was on my own, and old Robert Thompson come up, and he says, "Now then, Bob," he says, "I don't think he'll hear any more about that," he says, "but there's one thing. You will all have to go around in the morning, apologise to your Mendy's window, and that'll be the end of the story." That was a bit of typical Robert Thompson, if you like.
Was there many people in the workshop with you? Was there many people who worked in the workshop with you?
Oh yes, there was 20. There was like two workshops. Well, three. There was the machine shop downstairs. Up above that was what we call the top shop. And then at the end of that was the downstairs workshop. And at the end of that, the showroom. And in the showroom, the finished work was taken to be polished. So we were often commandeered to go in the showroom and wax polish the finished articles. Robert, what I should have told you, the youngest recruit had to stop work at 4:30 and go and put the coals and sticks into Mr. Thompson's house. That entailed, you had a box, a bit like a knife box, like a cutlery box, and in one half you had to put the kindling, and the other half you had to put clean shavings. He would not light his fire with paper. And the only clean shavings that you could find were if somebody had been jointing tabletops and you went along with the plane and you got a long clean shaving. So during the day, he kept his eyes out for clean shavings. And he had to take them in, and then close by the house was the log shed, and all the logs were taken out of the sawmill and dumped in there. So you had to fill this big basket with logs and carefully put them in this kitchen oak unit that was in the back kitchen. You had to quietly lift the lid up. You hadn't to bang it or anything. You had to quietly put the logs in one side, drop the kindling and the shavings in the other side. And then, on odd occasions, he would be sat in having his tea, and he would shout you in and ask how you were going. And with me, he used to ask how my grandparents were getting on, because he knew them quite well. And he used to get these apples sent up from Somerset in a big carton, and they were beautiful apples. And he always gave you one of these lovely apples. And he used to say, if they make good stick lads, they'll make good cabinet makers. So I don't know whether I made a good stick lad or a bad stick lad, but
you obviously made a very good cabinet maker to still be
were often sent to Ampleforth College to check round any chairs that needed a bit of work doing at them, you know, a bit of cleaning up, a bit of polishing, a bit of leather nailing down, all that sort of thing. And he used to send us on the United bus from Kilburn to Ampleforth, and then you had to catch the bus back. And one day me and this other lad we'd finished, and we're having a stroll around Ampleforth College, and the old father in charge bumped into us and said, what are you two doing? And we said, we've been doing this, and we finished. Oh, have you? Right, there's some more in here. Took us in and missed the bloody bus back. We had to walk back from Ampleforth to Kilburn.
Oh, that must have taken...
Robert wasn't ever happy about that. But there was no telephoning or anything in those days, you know. And a rare occasion, which I often think about, which I said that my uncle worked there most of his life, and my granddad was a good stonemason. And old Robert Thompson had been... was quite good at a bit of stone carving as well, as same as my granddad did. And there was a war memorial at Malmby, and there was some work to do, and a bit of repair work. And so my granddad, Robert Thompson, my uncle and me worked on it all together. And I often think that must have been a pretty rare occasion. And he treated us to a nice meal in Malmby while we were there, and looked after us. Every night he used to see the old bookman. He had two dogs, one called Snipe, Golden Labrador, and one called Ling, a little black spaniel. And you see him trudging up the road with them, you know, every night, just after 4 o'clock, just before logs and sticks down. When we used to get big lorry loads of oak coming in, and they were all to handle by hand, you know, off the lorry, onto the floor, and then up onto the gantry and be stacked with lads, you know. And old Robert Thompson, he had his little joke. He'd say, "Go and find somebody waking dead and strung it back." And I was usually one of them waking dead and strung it back. But the nice thing was, the wood yard was just sort of up the yard in full view of everybody in the workshop. So they could watch us slaving away, stuck in the timber. But what old Robert Thompson always did, instructed his housekeeper to bring us a good tea break up, and we all sat down and had cups of tea and cakes, whatever it was, in full view of everybody that's working in the workshop. And that was always, for me, good fun.
How did you get to work? Sorry, I've changed the subject. How did you get to work in the winter time on your bicycle?
On my bike, yeah.
Even if it was snowy?
Yeah. That went on for about the first 3 years, I think. After the first two, I got a motorbike and went on that. And then we finally bought a van to transport us to work. Thinking about the van and thinking about the times when the van was often away delivering furniture and quite often late back, in time to take us home. Mm. One night, we're all stood out on the road, waiting for the van. And old Robert Thompson came out to chat to us. And this fella came up the street. His job was a caretaker at Rainbow Abbey, I think. But he was a man who had lived in Kilburn all his life. And Comforth, Old Comforth, they called him. Anyway, there was another fella, young lad, came to work at Thompson's. And I'm still speaking about this same week. And his parents must have been very well off, but come on hard times, if you like, because he had been educated at, there was a place like Ampleforth, down on the south coast, I think they called it Downton, Downton Abbey or something, anyway, doesn't matter. And if you ever saw the television programme where David Jason had this big family of kids, have you remember it?
I do.
Can you remember the vehicle he drove? It was a Rolls Royce with a wooden back. Well, this fella had one exactly like that. It could have been the same vehicle. And he used to bring all these kids in this thing and drop Oscar off. And he talked very university type talk, you know.
How long did you work for him for?
Well, I only had 5 years with Robert Thompson.
Mm.
I started when I was 15, mm. but had to go into a national service at 21. I went and said goodbye to him. The day or weekend before I left, I can't remember which, we had to go to the Green Howards Barracks. I think it was on the Thursday. But I went and said goodbye to him. And he put his hand in his back pocket and he says, "Here you are, you will come back." And I never counted it, but it was just a fistful of pound notes. And I said, "Well, of course I'll come back. I never bloody well wanted to leave." And anyway, I was into motorbiking quite a lot in those days, riding in motorcycle trials. And one of the big events was called the Scott Trial, which, funnily enough, started at Richmond, which was where I had to go to the Green Howards. And Bob Cartwright, Robert Thompson's grandson, who eventually took over the business, had entered me for the Scott Trial, thinking I would be able to get leave. I couldn't get leave because the whole camp, or the whole of our intake, were confined to barracks because we were due to be posted to Cyprus. And we were told that nobody but nobody gets off this. Bob Cartwright asked old Robert Thompson to ring the commanding officer at Richmond to get me off, and he did. The orderly sergeant came to me. "You've been told you can go off. I don't know who the hell has pulled the string for you, but you go and you bloody well get yourself back here on Sunday morning," straight after the Scott Trial. So that was a bit of Robert Thompson's influence. The officers' mess at Richmond Barracks was completely furnished by Robert Thompson, and the recruits in those days had to polish that furniture till they could see themselves in it. So the Robert Thompson influence paid off. I got to Cyprus and we built, converted a little Nissen hut into a little church, and we had to do various things for the back of the altar and on the altar. And the only tools I had was a saw and a couple of chisels, but we managed to rig it up. And it was quite a nice little chapel. I used to enjoy going to communion there. And we finished our time there and had to come back on a troop ship, which took 10 days. And while I was on that troop ship, Robert Thompson died, and his funeral was over when I got back. So I missed out on his funeral. And, it's hard to explain, as we are sitting now, I'm finding it hard just to conjure up the memories that I want to conjure up. He bought me my first pint in a pub. We went to the Great Yorkshire Show when it was held at Wakefield. They used to move it around in those days. And we stopped at the pub on the way back, and he came with us on the bus, bought us all pint in the pub. That was nice. Well, I didn't drink a pint, I had a bottle, a small bottle of beer, but that was good. Getting back to the friends that I met whilst working there, one particular friend who is the only one of the two remaining apprentices that worked with me, the same age, and we became lifelong friends from first of all being at school and then going and starting work. We worked together, but he didn't have to go in the army, he failed his medical. And he is still alive now, only just. But him and I were at Kilburn Feast, and in our first year at work, and I had got, no, it must have been the second year because I had my motorbike. So we decided, because Derek's parents would all be in the pub, we would go to Coxall pub. And so him and I got on the bike and went to Coxall pub. And at Coxall pub, you could go up to the bar, and the left-hand end of the bar was a little corner where you could stand out of sight. Anyway, we goes in, and there was nobody else in the bar. And we both got ourselves a little bottle of beer each, and the bloody policeman walked in. He said, "Now then, what are you young beggars doing here?" He said, "We just come for a quiet drink out at Wayfrom Feast." "Oh, right." And he picked one of our drinks up, sucked it off, put the glass down, says, "Right, well, I'm going, behave your bloody selves." and the same lad, him and I, actually it was the same Kilburn Feast, and they had swing boats there, you know. And we were clever lads, we stood up in the swing boats and we were really good at going up a hell of a height. We just got right up and there he fell out. The swing went down, his legs caught the bar at the bottom and his back somersaulted and stood up, shook himself, he was right. Wow. Left to tell the tale. Because we went to do a job in Stokesley, and it was in the church in Stokesley. It was a big mural we had to put up at the back of the altar. And it wasn't a big job, it was just a question of fixing it. And so when we finished, old Robert Thompson says, "Oh, we better have a bit of dinner somewhere." And there was only myself and Len, the experienced man, and Robert Thompson. There's a good cafe just over there. Only half a crown for two, I think it was two courses or three, I can't remember which. And old Robert used to like to go to somewhere a bit more. "Anyway, I'm sure it's all right." And Len says, "It's a good place." So we goes and we had whatever it was, you know, it was quite a substantial, they were good in those days, you could get half a crown, you could get a good one. Anyway, we had a homemade, and old Robert Thompson disappeared. We thought he'd gone to the toilet, you know. And we could hear all this giggling and carrying on in the kitchen. Anyway, he come back and he didn't say anything. And anyway, we were wandering out and this lassie came by. Funny old man, is that? He came in kitchens and gave us all half a crown apiece. And another time, we went with him to work in Beverley Minster. We did it was a big job actually. It was creating a war memorial. There was a war memorial there, and there were three big archways, and all three of the archways had an oak screen across them. And between the centre archway was the huge memorial for the soldiers killed in the East Yorkshire, And so we had to go and take some patterns and various bits and pieces. And our job eventually was to turn the two outside screens round to form a little chapel with a memorial inside it. And so we went and we took a few samples for patterns and that sort of thing. And the old Robert Thompson says, right, we'll have to go and get something to eat now. And so, all right. And the hotel nearest the Beverley Minster was one of those trust houses, you know, like the Golden Fleece at first. He says, go on, we'll go in here. So we goes in. There was him, Len Hall, myself, and Ken Olmack, my other long-term friend. And we got sat down and we were in bib and brace overalls and all that, you know, and everybody else round about was all smartly dressed, you know, the office men and that sort of thing. And muskets, many of you were looking at many. What do you lads fancy? Would you like some tripe? We hadn't a clue what to ask for, you know. I've never been in a hotel before. Anyway, I can't remember what we had, but we had our dinner. And then, right, he says, come on, we'll have to go and have a pipe of bacca. And there was a wine, you know, place with coffee tables and that, where you had to go and sit so we could have a smoke. Sat in there having a smoke and chatting away to us lads in his broad jokes. Didn't give a damn about anybody else around him. It's so embarrassing.
What wonderful memories. It's
I forgot when we were in the Minster. He could easily have chopped one of Les' fingers off, because one of the screens was fitted up to a big pillar with moulded stonework around the bottom. And we wanted to cut a bit of it away. And old Robert Thompson was at one side of the screen, then on the other side of the screen, he was carefully trying to pull a bit of moulding off, and all of a sudden there was such a bang, and this axe came through just outside. What a carry on we had in there. We lodged in Beverley to do this work. And it was, there was all sorts of things going on at the time. And I don't know whether you ever remember the name Sir John Barbaroli. He was the conductor of the Halley Orchestra. He was one of the big names in the music world. But his wife was there practicing with another orchestra. And she came down and said, would you mind not hammering while we're rehearsing? And of course, you had a time limit, you know, to do this work. And eventually, they started banging like hell. And anyway, she gave up on it and left it. And at the same time, I dashed into the toilet for a wee. And kicked the lid up with my foot, and the lid flew up, back down, and the side of the toilet fell up. What do we do now? So I just gently put it back in, used the next toilet, and walked quietly out and didn't say anything to anybody. And one of the old church wardens or whatever they were that were strolling around all the time, he come to Len, he says, there's bloody choir boys, he says, the bean has smashed one of the damn toilets. And have you ever heard of Quasimodo up in the tower at Notre Dame? Well, in Beverly Minster, they had a Quasimodo or whatever. And he spent all this time working up in the roof. He was a most weird fella. And anyway, one lunchtime, Ken and I decided we'd have a look up into the church roof. And we got up there, and there was like walkways round. But they came to a stop, and then there was another walkway a bit further along, but there was a pillar, you know, so he couldn't go. And old Quasimodo put the scaffold planks across so he could walk across. Anyway, he says, "Go on, lads, you can get over here." If you've ever been up in a cathedral looking down, you're a long way up, and there's a long... It's quite frightening. Anyway, I got onto the board and set up. And, "Come on, you're all right." And he started jumping up and down on me. Straight down on my hands and knees, you know. And anyway, I crawled over him. And then Ken did the same thing. "Bah, you talk about scaring the wits out of you."
That sounds terrible.
Ken Olmack and I, the other lad who worked with me, decided many years ago, it was while my wife was still alive, and we just have a ride to Beverly and go and have a look at the work that we'd done. And we went. And I was quite amazed when I saw what we'd done and the way it looked, you know. And went and looked at the day that it was dedicated, and it was exactly 50 years to the day that we visited.
Oh, how wonderful.
Another thing Robert Thompson pointed out to us while we're in Beverly Minster, there's a big main doors that led in from outside. I think the doors that are not used now. And he says, "Come and have a look at this trademark." And it was a garden pea split showing five peas in the pod. A trademark.
The same way as he used a mouse.
This
person, and what period would that have been?
That was, I think it would be something like 16th century, very old. He'd spotted it, you know. And also, while we were there, and it was while we were going from the minster into the restaurant, and he said, "Mary's Church over there, look," and you could see it down the road. And that is my favourite, all-time favourite church. And he said, "There are 53 panels in the entrance door, and each panel represents a soldier that was killed in the East Riding." And that's where I learnt a bit more about wood carving. And he said to me one day, "We'll make a carver out of you, even if it's only carving Sunday George."
Oh, brilliant. Right, I'll pop that to her.